Then I must have the rune blades. I must pass through the Shade Gate. There I still have allies, supernatural allies, who shall deal easily with Elric if need be. But I need time. Yurkun mumbled to himself as he paced about the room. Valhara continued to watch the fighting. They come closer, said the captain. Simrel smiled. Closer, Yurkun. Who is the fool now? Elric or you? Be still! I think! Yurkun fingered his lips. Then a light came into his eye and he looked cunningly at Simrel for a second before turning his attention to Captain Valharic. Valharic, you must destroy the Mirror of Memory.
Destroy it? But it is our only weapon, my lord.
Exactly, but is it not useless now?
Aye.
Destroy it, and it will serve us again.
Yurkun flicked a long finger in the direction of the door.
Go! Destroy the mirror!
But Prince Yurkun, Emperor, I mean, will that not have the effect of robbing us of our only weapon?
Do as I say, Valharic, or perish!
But how shall I destroy it, my lord?
Your sword! You must climb the column behind the face of the mirror. Then, without looking into the mirror itself, you must swing your sword against it and smash it. It will break easily. You know the precautions I've had to take to make sure that it was not harmed.
Is that all I must do?
Aye, then you are free from my service. You may escape or do whatever else you wish to do.
Do we not sail against Melniboné?
Of course not. I have devised another method of taking the Dragon Isle.
Valharic shrugged. His expression showed that he never really believed Yurkun's assurances. But what else had he to do but follow Yurkun when fearful torture awaited him at Elric's hands? With shoulders bowed, the captain slunk away to do his prince's work.
And now, Simrel.
Yurkun grinned like a ferret as he reached out to grab his sister's soft shoulders.
Now, to prepare you for your lover, Elric.
One of the blind warriors cried.
They no longer resist us, my lord. They're limp and allow themselves to be cut down where they stand. Why is this?
The mirror has robbed them of their memories, Elric called, turning his own blind head towards the sound of the warrior's voice.
You can lead us into a building now, where, with luck, we shall not glimpse the mirror.
At last they stood within what appeared to Elric as he lifted his helm to be a warehouse of some kind. Luckily, it was large enough to hold their entire force, and when they were all inside, Elric had the doors shut while they debated their next action.
We should find Yurkun, Dibim Tvar said.
Let us interrogate one of those warriors.
There'll be little point in that, my friend. Their minds are gone. They remember nothing at all. They do not at present remember even what they are, let alone who.
Go to the shutters yonder, where the mirror's influence cannot reach, and see if you can see the building most likely to be occupied by my cousin.
Dibim Tvar crossed swiftly to the shutters and looked cautiously out.
Aye. There's a building larger than the rest, and I see movement within, as if the surviving warriors were regrouping. It's likely that's Yurkun's stronghold. It should be easily taken.
I agree with you. We'll find Yurkun there, but we must hurry, lest he decides to slay Simrel. We must work out the best means of reaching the place, and instruct our blind warriors as to how many streets, how many houses, and so forth we must pass.
What is that strange sound?
One of the blind warriors raised his head.
Like the distant ringing of a gong.
I hear it too.
And now Elric heard it, a sinister noise. It came from the air above them. It shivered through the atmosphere.
The mirror. Dibim Tvar looked up. Has the mirror some property we did not anticipate?
Possibly. Elric tried to remember what Arioch had told him, but Arioch had been vague. He'd said nothing of this dreadful, mighty sound, this shattering clangor, as if...
He's breaking the mirror, Elric said. But why?
There was something now, something brushing at his brain, as if the sound were itself sentient.
Perhaps Yurkun is dead, and his magic dies with him,
Dibim Tvar began, but then... He broke off with a groan. The noise was louder, more intense, bringing sharp pain to his ears. And now Elric knew. He blocked his ears with his gauntleted hands. The memories, in the mirror. They were flooding into his mind. The mirror had been smashed and was releasing all the memories it had stolen over the centuries, the eons, perhaps. Many of those memories were not mortal. Many were the memories of beasts and intelligent creatures which had existed even before Melnibone. And the memories warred for a place in Elric's skull, in the skulls of all the Imrerians, in the poor, tortured skulls of the men outside whose pitiful screams could be heard rising from the streets, and in the skull of Captain Balharic, the turncoat, as he lost his footing on the great column and fell with the shards from the mirror to the ground far below. But Elric did not hear Captain Balharic's scream, and he did not hear his body crash first into a rooftop and then into the street where it lay all broken beneath the broken mirror. Elric lay upon the stone floor of the warehouse and he writhed as his comrades writhed, trying to clear his head of a million memories that were not his own, of loves, of hatreds, of strange experiences and ordinary experiences, of wars and journeys, of the faces of relatives who were not his relatives, of men and women and children, of animals, of ships and cities, of fights, of lovemaking, of fears and desires. And the memories fought each other for possession of his crowded skull, threatening to drive his own memories and thus his own character from his head. And as Elric writhed upon the ground, clutching at his ears, he spoke a word over and over again in an effort to cling to his own identity. Elric! 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 And gradually, by an effort which he had experienced only once before when he had summoned Arioch to the plane of the earth, he managed to extinguish all those alien memories and assert his own until, shaken and feeble, he lowered his hands from his ears and no longer shouted his own name. And then he stood up and looked about him. More than two-thirds of his men were dead, blind or otherwise. The big bosun was dead, his eyes wide and staring, his lips frozen in a scream, his right eye socket raw and bleeding from where he tried to drag his eye from it. All the corpses lay in unnatural positions, all had their eyes open if they had eyes, and many bore the marks of self-mutilation, while others had vomited and others had dashed their brains against the wall. Divam Tavar was alive, but curled up in a corner, mumbling to himself, and Elric thought he might be mad. Some of the other survivors were indeed mad, but they were quiet. They afforded no danger. Only five, including Elric, seemed to have resisted the alien memories and retained their own sanity. It seemed to Elric, as he stumbled from corpse to corpse, that most of the men had had their hearts fail. Divam Tavar! Elric put his hand on his friend's shoulder. Divam Tavar! Divam Tavar took his head from his arm and looked into Elric's eyes. In Divam Tavar's own eyes was the experience of a score of millennia, and there was irony there too. I live, Elric. Few of us live now. A little later they left the warehouse, no longer needing to fear the mirror, and found that all the streets were full of the dead who had received the mirror's memories. Stiff bodies reached out hands to them. Dead lips formed silent pleas for help. Elric tried not to look at them as he pressed through them, but his desire for vengeance upon his cousin was even stronger now. They reached the house. The door was open and the ground floor was crammed with corpses. There was no sign of Prince Irkun. Elric and Divam Tavar led the few Imrerians who were still sane up the steps, past more imploring corpses until they reached the top floor of the house, and there they found Simrel. She was lying upon a couch and she was naked. There were runes painted on her flesh, and the runes were in themselves obscene. Her eyelids were heavy, and she did not at first recognize them. Elric rushed to her side and cradled her body in his arms. The body was oddly cold. He makes me sleep, she said. A sorcerer's sleep from which only he can wake me. She gave a great yawn. I have stayed awake this long by an effort of will, for Elric comes. Elric is here. I am Elric, Simrel. Elric? You must find Irkun, for only he can wake me.
Where has he gone? Elric's face hardened, his crimson eyes were fierce.
Where? To find the two black swords, the rune swords of our ancestors. Mournblade
and Stormbringer. These swords are cursed, but where has he gone, Simrel? How has he escaped us?
Through the Shade Gate. He conjured it. He made the most fearful pacts with demons to go through the other room.
And now Simrel slept, but there seemed to be a certain peace on her face. Elric watched as Dyvim Tavar crossed the room, sword in hand, and flung the door open. A dreadful stench came from the next room, which was in darkness. Something flickered on the far side.
Aye, that's sorcery right enough. And Irkun has thwarted me. He conjured the Shade Gate and passed through it into some nether world.
Which one I'll never know, for there is an infinity of them. Oh, Ariok, I would give much to follow my cousin.
Then follow him, you shall,
said a sweet, sardonic voice in Elric's head. At first, the albino thought it was a vestige of a memory still fighting for possession of his head, but then he knew that Ariok spoke to him.
Dismiss your followers, that I may speak with thee.
Elric hesitated. He wished to be alone, but not with Ariok. He wished to be with Simrel, for Simrel was making him weep. Tears already flowed from his crimson eyes.
What I have to say could result in Simrel being restored to her normal state. And, moreover, it will help you defeat Irkun and be revenged upon him. Indeed, it could make you the most powerful mortal there has ever been.
Elric looked up at Dyvim Tavar.
Would you and your men leave me alone for a few moments?
Of course.
Dyvim Tavar led his men away and shut the door behind him. Ariok stood leaning against the same door. Again, he had assumed the shape and poise of a handsome youth. His smile was friendly and open, and only the ancient eyes belied his appearance.
It is time to seek the black swords yourself, Elric, lest your coon reach them first. I warn you of this. With the rune blades, your coon will be so powerful he will be able to destroy half the world without thinking of it. That is why your cousin risks the dangers of the world beyond the Shade Gate. If your coon possesses those swords before you find them, it will mean the end of you, of Simrel, of the Young Kingdoms, and, quite possibly, the destruction of Melnibone. I will help you enter the Netherworld to seek for the twin moonblades.
I have often been warned of the dangers of seeking the swords and the worst dangers of owning them. I think I must consider another plan, my Lord Ariok.
There is no other plan. Irkun desires the swords if you do not, with Mournblade in one hand and Stormbringer in the other, he will be invincible. For the swords give their user power, immense power. You must do as I say. It is to your advantage.
And to yours, Lord Ariok?
Aye, to mine. I am not entirely selfless.
I am confused. There has been too much of the supernatural about this affair. I suspect the gods of manipulating us.
The gods only serve those who are willing to serve them. And the gods serve destiny also.
I'd like it not. To stop Irkun is one thing. To assume his ambitions and take the swords myself, that is another thing.
It is your destiny.
Cannot I change my destiny?
Ariok shook his head.
No more than can I.
Elric stroked sleeping Simrel's hair.
I love her. She is all I desire.
You shall not wake her if your coon finds the blades before you do. And how shall I find the blades?
Enter the Shade Gate. I have kept it open, though Yurkun thinks it closed. Then you must seek the tunnel under the marsh, which leads to the pulsing cavern. In that chamber, the rune swords are kept. They have been kept there ever since your ancestors relinquished them.
Why were they relinquished?
Your ancestors lacked courage.
Courage to face what?
Themselves.
You are cryptic, my Lord Ariok.
That is the way of the lords of the higher worlds. Hurry. Even I cannot keep the Shade Gate open long.
Very well. I will go.
And Ariok vanished immediately.
Elric called in a hoarse, cracking voice for Dyvim Tavar. Dyvim Tavar entered at once.
Elric, what has happened in here? Is it Simril? You look...
I'm going to follow Irkun alone, Dyvim Tavar. You must make your way back to Melnibone with those of our men who remain. Take Simril with you. If I do not return in reasonable time, you must declare her empress. If she still sleeps, then you must rule as regent until she wakes.
Do you know what you do, Elric?
No, Dyvim Tavar. I do not.
He got to his feet and staggered towards the other room where the Shade Gate waited for him. And Elric stepped into a shadow and found himself in a world of shadows. He turned, but the shadow through which he had entered now faded and was gone. Old Aubek's sword was in Elric's hand. The black helm and the black armor were upon his body, and only these were familiar, for the land was dark and gloomy, as if contained in a vast cave whose walls, though invisible, were oppressive and tangible. And Elric regretted the hysteria, the weariness of brain which had given him the impulse to obey his patron demon Ariok and plunge through the Shade Gate. But regret was useless now, so he forgot it. Yurkun was nowhere to be seen. Either Elric's cousin had had a steed awaiting him, or else, more likely, he had entered this world at a slightly different angle, for all the planes were said to turn about each other, and was thus either nearer or farther from their mutual goal. The air was rich with brine, so rich that Elric's nostrils felt as if they had been packed with salt. It was almost like walking underwater and just being able to breathe the water itself. Perhaps this explained why it was so difficult to see any great distance in any direction, why there were so many shadows, why the sky was like a veil which hid the roof of a cavern. Elric sheathed his sword, there being no evident danger present at that moment, and turned slowly, trying to get some kind of bearing. It was possible there were jagged mountains in what he judged the east, and perhaps a forest to the west. Without sun or stars or moon, it was hard to gauge distance or direction. He stood on a rocky plain, over which whistled a cold and sluggish wind, which tugged at his cloak, as if it wished to possess it. There were a few stunted, leafless trees standing in a clump about 100 paces away. It was all that relieved the bleak plain, save for a large, shapeless slab of rock which stood a fair way beyond the trees. It was a world which seemed to have been drained of all life, where law and chaos had battled, and, in their conflict, destroyed all. Were there many plains such as this one? Elric wondered. And for a moment he was filled with a dreadful presentiment concerning the fate of his own rich world. He shook this mood off at once and began to walk towards the trees and the rock beyond. He reached the trees and passed them, and the touch of his cloak on a branch broke the brittle thing, which turned almost at once to ash, which was scattered on the wind. Elric drew the cloak closer about his body. As he approached the rock, he became conscious of a sound which seemed to emanate from it. He slowed his pace and put his hand upon the pommel of his sword. The noise continued, a small, rhythmic noise. Through the gloom, Elric peered carefully at the rock, trying to locate the source of the sound.
and then the noise stopped and was replaced by another, a soft scuffle, a padding footfall, and then silence. Elric took a pace backward and drew Aubek's sword. The first sound had been that of a man sleeping. The second sound was that of a man waking and preparing himself either for attack or to defend himself. He said, "I am Elric of Melnibone. I am a stranger here." And an arrow slid past his helm almost at the same moment as a bowstring sounded. Elric flung himself to one side and sought about for cover, but there was no cover save the rock behind which the archer hid. And now a voice came from behind the rock. It was a firm, rather bleak voice. "That was not meant to harm you, but to display my skill in case you considered harming me. I've had my fill of demons in this world, and you look like the most dangerous demon of all, Whiteface." "I am mortal," said Elric, straightening up and deciding that if he must die, it would be best to die with some sort of dignity. "You spoke of Melnibone. I've heard of the place, an Isle of Demons." "Then you've not heard enough of Melnibone. I am mortal, as are all my folk. Only the ignorant think us demons."
"I am not ignorant, my friend. I am a warrior priest of Fum, born to that caste and the inheritor of all its knowledge. And, until recently, the Lords of Chaos themselves were my patrons. Then I refused to serve them longer and was exiled to this plane by them. Perhaps the same fate befell you, for the folk of Melnibone serve Chaos, do they not?"
"Aye, and I know of Fum. It lies in the unmapped east, beyond the Weeping Waste, beyond the Sighing Desert, even beyond Elwer. It is one of the oldest of the Young Kingdoms."
"All that is so, though I dispute that the east is unmapped, save by the savages of the west. So, you are indeed to share my exile, it seems."
"I am not exiled. I am upon a quest. When the quest is done, I shall return to my own world."
"Return, you say? That interests me, my pale friend. I had thought return impossible."
"Perhaps it is, and I have been tricked. And if your own powers have not found you a way to another plane, perhaps mine will not save me either."
"Powers? I have none since I relinquished my servitude to Chaos. Well, friend, do you intend to fight me?"
"There is only one upon this plane I would fight, and it is not you, warrior priest of Fum." Elric sheathed his sword, and at the same moment the speaker rose from behind the rock, replacing a scarlet fletched arrow in a scarlet quiver.
"I am Rakhir, called the Red Archer, for, as you see, I affect scarlet dress. It is a habit of the warrior priests of Fum to choose but a single color to wear. It is the only loyalty to tradition I still possess."
He had on a scarlet jerkin, scarlet breeks, scarlet shoes, and a scarlet cap with a scarlet feather in it. His bow was scarlet, and the pommel of his sword glowed ruby red. His face, which was aquiline and gaunt as if carved from fleshless bone, was weather-beaten, and that was brown. He was tall and he was thin, but muscles rippled on his arms and torso. There was irony in his eyes and something of a smile upon his thin lips, though the face showed that it had been through much experience, little of it pleasant.
"An odd place to choose for a quest," said the Red Archer,
standing with hands on hips and looking Elric up and down.
"But I'll strike a bargain with you if you're interested."
"If the bargain suits me, Archer, I'll agree to it, for you seem to know more of this world than I do."
"Well, you must find something here and then leave, whereas I have nothing at all to do here and wish to leave. If I help you in your quest, will you take me with you when you return to our own plane?"
"That seems a fair bargain, but I cannot promise what I have no power to give. I will say only this. If it is possible for me to take you back with me to our own plane, either before or after I've finished my quest, I will do it."
"That is reasonable. Now, tell me what you seek."
I seek two swords, forged millennia ago by immortals, used by my ancestors but then relinquished by them and placed upon this plane. The swords are large and heavy and black, and they have cryptic runes carved into their blades. I was told that I would find them in the pulsing cavern, which is reached through the tunnel under the marsh. Have you heard of either of these places?
I have not, nor have I heard of the two black swords. Though I remember reading something in one of the books of Fum, and what I read disturbed me.
The swords are legendary. Many books make some small reference to them, almost always mysterious. There is said to be one tome which records the history of the swords and all who have used them, and all who will use them in the future, a timeless book which contains all time. Some call it the Chronicle of the Black Sword, and in it, it is said, men may read their whole destinies.
I know nothing of that either. It is not one of the books of Fum. I fear, Comrade Elric, that we shall have to venture to the city of Amiron to ask your questions of the inhabitants there.
There is a city upon this plain?
Aye, a city. I stayed but a short time in it, preferring the wilderness. But with a friend it might be possible to bear the place a little longer.
Why is Amiron unsuited to your taste?
Its citizens are not happy. Indeed, they are a most oppressed and depressing group, for they are all, you see, exiles or refugees or travelers between the worlds who lost their way and never found it again. No one lives in Amiron by choice.
A veritable city of the damned.
As the poet might remark, aye. But I sometimes think all cities are that.
What is the nature of this plane, where are, as far as I can tell, no planets, no moon, no sun? It has something of the air of a great cavern.
There is indeed a theory that it is a sphere buried in an infinity of rock. Others say that it lies in the future of our own Earth, a future where the universe has died. I heard a thousand theories during the short space of time I spent in the city of Amiron. All, it seemed to me, were of equal value. All, it seemed to me, could be correct. Why not? There are some who believe that everything is a lie. Conversely, everything could be the truth.
You are a philosopher, then, as well as an archer, friend Rakir of Fum.
If you like. It is such thinking that weakened my loyalty to chaos and led me to this pass. I have heard there is a city called Tanalorn, which may sometimes be found on the shifting shores of the Sighing Desert. If I ever return to our own world, Comrade Elric, I shall seek that city, for I have heard that peace may be found there, that such debates as the nature of truth are considered meaningless, that men are content to merely exist in Tanalorn.
I envy those who dwell in Tanalorn.
Aye, but it would probably prove a disappointment if found. Legends are best left as legends, and attempts to make them real are rarely successful. Come, yonder lies Amiron, and that, sad to say, is more typical of most cities one comes across on any plane.
The two tall men, both outcasts in their different ways, began to trudge through the gloom of that desolate wasteland. The city of Amiron came in sight, and Elric had never seen such a place before. Amiron made Doge Cam seem like the cleanest and most well-run settlement there could be. The city lay below the plain of rocks, in a shallow valley over which hung perpetual smoke, a filthy, tattered cloak meant to hide the place from the sight of men and gods. The buildings were mostly in a state of semi-ruin or else were wholly ruined, and shacks and tents erected in their place. The mixture of architectural styles, some familiar, some most alien, was such that Elric was hard put to see one building which resembled another. There were shanties and castles, cottages, towers and forts, square villas and wooden huts heavy with carved ornamentation.
Others seem merely piles of rock with a jagged opening at one end for a door. But none looked well, could not have looked well in that landscape under that perpetually gloomy sky. Here and there red fire sputtered, adding to the smoke, and the smell, as Elric and Rakir reached the outskirts, was rich with a great variety of stinks.
"Arrogance rather than pride is the paramount quality of most of Amiron's residents," said Rakir, wrinkling his hawk-like nose. "Where they have any qualities of character left at all."
Elric trudged through filth. Shadows scuttled amongst the close-packed buildings. "Is there an inn, perhaps, where we can inquire after the tunnel under the marsh and its whereabouts?"
"No inn. By and large, the inhabitants keep themselves to themselves."
"A city square, where folk meet."
"The city has no center. Each resident or group of residents built their own dwelling where they felt like it, or where there was space. And they come from all planes and all ages, thus the confusion, the decay, and the oldness of many of the places, thus the filth, the hopelessness, the decadence of the majority."
"How do they live?"
"They live off each other, by and large. They trade with demons who occasionally visit Amiron from time to time."
"Demons?"
"Aye, and the bravest hunt the rats which dwell in the caverns below the city."
"What demons are these?"
"Just creatures, mainly minor minions of chaos, who want something that the Amiranese can supply. A stolen soul or two, a baby, perhaps, though few are born here. You can imagine what else, if you've knowledge of what demons normally demand from sorcerers."
I can imagine. So chaos can come and go on this plane as it pleases."
"I'm not sure it's quite as easy, but it is certainly easier for the demons to travel back and forth here than it would be for them to travel back and forth in our plane."
"Have you seen any of these demons?"
"Aye, the usual bestial sort, coarse, stupid, and powerful. Many of them were once human beings before electing to bargain with chaos. Now they are mentally and physically warped into foul demon shapes."
Elric found Rakir's words not to his taste. "Is that ever the fate of those who bargain with chaos?"
"You should know if you come from Melnibone. I know that in Fum it is rarely the case, but it seems that the higher the stakes, the subtler are the changes a man undergoes when chaos agrees to trade with him."
"Where shall we inquire of our tunnel under the marsh?"
"There was an old man,"
Rakir began, and then a grunt behind him made him pause. Another grunt. A face with tusks in it emerged from a patch of darkness formed by a fallen slab of masonry. The face grunted again. "Who are you?" said Elric, his sword hand ready.
"Pig,"
said the face with tusks in it. Elric was not certain whether he was being insulted or whether the creature was describing himself.
"Pig!"
Two more faces with tusks in them came out of the patch of darkness.
"Pig!"
said one.
"Pig!"
said another. "Snake!" said a voice behind Elric and Rakir. Elric turned while Rakir continued to watch the pigs. A tall youth stood there. Where his head would have been, sprouted the bodies of about 15 good-sized snakes. The head of each snake glared at Elric. The tongues flickered, and they all opened their mouths at exactly the same moment to say again, "Snake."
"Thing,"
said another voice. Elric glanced in that direction, gasped, drew his sword, and felt nausea sweep through him. Then pigs, snake, and thing were upon them. Rakir took one pig before it could move 3 paces. His bow was off his back and strung, and a red-fletched arrow knocked and shot, all in a second. He had time to shoot one more pig and then drop his bow to draw his sword. Back to back, he and Elric prepared to defend themselves against the demon's attack. Snake was bad enough, with its 15 darting heads hissing and snapping with teeth which dripped venom. But Thing kept changing its form. First an arm would emerge, then a face would appear from the shapeless, heaving flesh, which shuffled implacably closer.
"Thing!"
it shouted.
two swords slashed at Elric, who was dealing with the last pig and missed his stroke, so that instead of running Pig through the heart, he took him in a lung. Pig staggered backward and slumped to the ground in a pool of muck. He crawled for a moment, but then collapsed. Thing had produced a spear, and Elric barely managed to deflect the cast with the flat of his sword. Now Rakir was engaged with Snake, and the two demons closed on the man, eager to make a finish of them. Half the heads of Snake lay writhing on the ground, and Elric had managed to slice one hand off Thing, but the demon still seemed to have three other hands ready. It seemed to be created not from one creature, but from several. Elric wondered if, through his bargaining with Arioch, this would ultimately be his fate, to be turned into a demon, a formless monster. But wasn't he already something of a monster? Didn't folk already mistake him for a demon? These thoughts gave him strength. He yelled as he fought, "Elric!" And "Thing!" replied his adversary, also eager to assert what he regarded as the essence of his being. Another hand flew off as Aubek's sword bit into it. Another javelin jabbed out and was knocked aside. Another sword appeared and came down on Elric's helm with a force which dazed him and sent him reeling back against Rakir, who missed his thrust at Snake and was almost bitten by four of the heads. Elric chopped at the arm and the tentacle which held the sword and saw them part from the body, but then become reabsorbed again. The nausea returned. Elric thrust his sword into the mass, and the mass screamed, "Thing! Thing! Thing!" Elric thrust again, and four swords and two spears waved and clashed and tried to deflect Aubek's blade. "Thing!" "This is Irkun's work, without a doubt. He has heard that I have followed him and seeks to stop us with his demon allies." He gritted his teeth and spoke through them. "Unless one of these is Irkun himself. Are you my cousin, Irkun Thing? Thing!" Its voice was almost pathetic. The weapons waved and clashed, but they no longer darted so fiercely at Elric. "Or are you some other old, familiar friend? Thing!" Elric stabbed again and again into the mass. Thick, reeking blood spurted and fell upon his armor. Elric could not understand why it had become so easy to take the attack to the demon. "Now!" shouted a voice from above Elric's head. "Quickly!" Elric glanced up and saw a red face, a white beard, a waving arm. "Don't look at me, you fool! Now! Strike!" And Elric put his two hands above his sword hilt and drove the blade deep into the shapeless creature, which moaned and wept and said in a small whisper, "Frank," before it died. Rakir thrust at the same moment, and his blade went under the remaining snake heads and plunged into the chest and thence into the heart of the youth body, and his demon died too. The white-haired man came clambering down from the ruined archway on which he'd been perched. He was laughing. "Nihun's sorcery still has some effect even here, eh? I heard the Tall One call his demon friends and instruct them to set upon you. It did not seem fair to me that five should attack two, so I sat upon that wall and I drew the many-armed demon's strength out of it. I still can. I still can. And now I have his strength, or a fair part of it, and feel considerably better than I have done in many a moon. If such a thing exists."
"It said Frank," said Elric, frowning. "Was that a name, do you think, its name before?"
"Perhaps. Perhaps. Poor creature. But still, it is dead now. You are not of Amiron, you two, for though I've seen you here before, Red One." "And I've seen you," said Rakir with a smile. He wiped Snake's blood from his blade, using one of Snake's heads for the purpose.
"You are Nihun, who knew all."
"Aye, who knew all, but who knows very little. Soon it will be over when I have forgotten everything. Then I may return from this awful exile. It is the pact I made with Orland of the Staff. I was a fool who wished to know everything, and my curiosity led me to an adventure concerning this Orland. Orland showed me the error of my ways and sent me here to forget. Sadly, as you noticed, I still remember some of my powers and my knowledge from time to time.
I know you seek the Black Swords. I know you are Elric of Melnivene. I know what will become of you.
You know my destiny. Tell me what it is, Niyun, who knew all.
Niyun opened his mouth as if to speak, but then firmly shut it again.
No, I have forgotten.
No, no, you remember. I can see that you remember.
I have forgotten.
Niyun lowered his head. Rakir took hold of Elric's arm.
He has forgotten, Elric.
Elric nodded. Very well. But have you remembered where lies the tunnel under the marsh?
Yes. It's only a short distance from Amira on the marsh itself. You go that way. Then you look for a monument in the shape of an eagle carved in black marble. At the base of the monument is the entrance to the tunnel.
Niyun repeated this information parrot fashion, and when he looked up, his face was clearer.
What did I just tell you?
You gave us instructions on how to reach the entrance to the tunnel under the marsh.
Did I?
Niyun clapped his old hands.
Splendid! I have forgotten that now, too. Who are you?
We are best forgotten, said Rakir with a gentle smile.
Farewell, Niyun, and thanks. Thanks for what?
Both for remembering and forgetting.
They walked on through the miserable city of Amiron, away from the happy old sorcerer, sighting the odd face staring at them from a doorway or a window, doing their best to breathe as little of the foul air as possible.
I think perhaps that I envy Niyun alone of all the inhabitants of this desolate place.
I pity him.
Why so?
It occurs to me that when he's forgotten everything, he may well forget that he's allowed to leave Amiron.
Rakir laughed and slapped the albino upon his black armored back.
You are a gloomy comrade, friend Elric. Are all your thoughts so hopeless?